10 minutes into my CIA career, my new boss predicted my romantic prospects. "If you start here married, you'll probably get a divorce," he said, intruding into my bare cubicle. "But if you come in single and then you get married, it'll definitely end in divorce." The unsolicited and inappropriate counsel didn't really bother me at the time. I was a bullheaded 20-something, burning up with ambition. My only goal then was to get to the field to hunt down Al-Qaeda. I dismissed him with a polite scoff. "It's true," he said. "Cover operations, all the lies and TDYs, they take their toll in the end. Always do. It's just the nature of the job." "Thanks, Chief, I guess." He clapped me on the back. "Just looking out for you, Doug." I would soon discover this pearl of wisdom was the relationship mantra in the Directorate of Operations. Because spies have no one on the outside with whom to discuss the unique challenges in their personal lives, intimate woes were often routine discussions in the bullpen. With each ops desk rotation, I encountered the same tragic tales of breakups, affairs, separations, and divorce. Everyone from senior managers to the newest trainees had their romantic war stories, the times when the wheels finally broke off their wagons. I commiserated with my new colleagues over coffee and beers, but I always considered myself apart from their troubles. My singular goal was to contribute to the bloody demise of Osama bin Laden. Relationships were the last thing on my mind. Until Hannah came along. My first date as a bona fide intelligence officer came the summer after I started. I met Hannah the old-fashioned way, through a friend. There were no smartphones or matching algorithms in those days. We both arrived to the rendezvous point in DuPont Circle despite the first torrential downpour of the season. And to my surprise, we hit it off. Just like I did with all my other friends, I told Hannah I was an entry-level IT professional in about as boring terms as possible. To her credit, she feigned interest until I moved the conversation to topics better suited to my charms. Hannah was disarmingly cute and funny and smart, which melted my anxieties away. I'll never forget that night. We got drenched, drunk, and then tied. We laughed our asses right off of our bar stools. We spent every night together the rest of the summer. Hannah became the first real girlfriend I ever had. First true love, too. I don't know how better to describe it, but each second with her felt like the go-ahead touchdown for a Buckeye National Championship. I never wanted our time together to end. But after each unforgettable date together, Chief's prognosis echoed in my mind. "It won't last. It can't last. It's just the nature of the job." As our relationship progressed, I struggled with what to say to Hannah about our lives together. If I couldn't be honest with her about my career, how could I be honest about our future? I knew she had questions and concerns, but it was simply easier to ignore them. So I roped off the elephant in the room with bright yellow police tape and carried on. It turned out I wasn't the only one with secrets. She had accepted a job in New York City. My ears literally rang at the news, so loud I cannot recall if I responded or sat in silence. Of course, I deserved it in every way, but her deception felt like betrayal of the worst kind. My own medicine was too bitter to swallow. Being the macho, stubborn idiot that I was, I couldn't work up the courage to suggest we try to continue our relationship long distance. I couldn't even tell her I loved her. Instead, I watched over the next week as she prepared to get on with her life without me. I didn't fight it. It seemed like a fait accompli. Chief's prophecy fulfilled. The night before she left, we ate at Typhoon, the place of our first date. All she wanted me to say was that I loved her and that I would do anything to make it work. I wanted to, I really did, but I was young and irresponsible. I planned my life in weekly increments. My training at the farm loomed ahead. My long-desired tour to Afghanistan just beyond that. Truth be told, though, I mostly feared exposing any vulnerability. Don't ask me why. I drove her back to her apartment the next morning, where her brother waited with a U-Haul. We hugged in the car so long my foot went numb on the brake pedal. She opened the door in tears. I was on the verge myself. I had anticipated I would be too choked up to speak, so I gave her a card with my thoughts instead. A single quote from Oscar Wilde. "If you won't be long, I'll wait for you here all my life." Just as soon as I rounded the next corner, I received a novel-length text. And keep in mind, this was back even before the T9 days, when every letter was a pain to key in. And it was urging me to come visit her in New York. I must have traveled over 50 times to the Big Apple on subsequent trips to see her. This was great fun for a small-town Midwesterner like me. It opened my eyes to the larger world and sparked in me an endless curiosity. When she worked late or on the weekends, I walked the soles off my shoes getting to know the city. It wasn't long until I took her to the hidden gems each borough had to offer. Because I couldn't tell her where I worked directly, I opened the kimono, so to speak, in my own way. I organized elaborate scavenger hunts throughout the city in which she played the role of a secret agent. She scoured the financial district, Midtown, Central Park, and Soho for clues, while I trailed her incognito. Once I forced her to approach a table of unsuspecting tourists in the Trump Tower atrium to receive an envelope of instructions taped under their table. Each goose chase ended in a picnic, or a sunset stroll, or a wild night on the town. Usually the latter. Things were as good as they could get in those days. Sure, the long distance thing was hard, but we made it work the best we could. However, with each passing weekend or holiday together, my own secrets grew heavier. My departure for the farm, the agency's top secret spy schoolhouse, grew imminent. The rigorous tradecraft training didn't just mean long distance. It meant radio silence. What was a man like me to do? The smarter thing would have been to handle it like a mature adult, to reason with the woman I loved until every facet had been discussed, both parties represented, all voices heard. But Chief's tragic maxim reverberated between my ears like a breakup song on replay. The evidence, the carcasses of failed relationships piling up around me at work, was conclusive. The outcome was already predetermined. So I broke it off. I honestly thought that the long-term gain outweighed the short-term pain. I would break Hannah's heart and my own, but better now than 3 years down the line. Better before we got too serious or, God forbid, married. Only one path led forward. It was just a matter of when I started walking. Hannah didn't understand. It was a ridiculous conversation, really. It went something like this. "We have to break up." "Why?" "I'm moving." "Why?" "Because of my career." You mean your IT job? The one you have never shown any interest in, like, at all? The one you said would kill you with boredom? That job? I wasn't even sure you were still employed. That's the one. Yep. Uh-huh. I know you're lying to me, Doug. No, I'm not. Why do you say that? Just tell me the truth. I am. We have to break up. My story was absurd, but I had rules I was required to follow. I believed my cover was important for national security. My secret's too vital to share even with the woman of my dreams. I deserved the crushing heartbreak, I thought. Chief had warned me that the disaster was inevitable, and stupidly, I had ignored him. But Hannah didn't. She had every right to hate me. The weekend before I left for the farm, Hannah came to visit me at my apartment. The place was depressingly empty, a perfect representation of how we both felt inside. We spoke in short, terse sentences if we spoke at all. Any more in our tears threatened to drown us. I walked her to M Street the next morning to hail a taxi. Again, I couldn't tell her how I really felt. As she jumped into the cab, I handed her another card, but this one with no help from Oscar Wilde. This one simply told the truth. Hannah drove away in the diamond yellow cab. The next day, as I surrendered my cell phone to security at the farm, Hannah sent me a text message. She explained how she thought she understood and ended with three words I won't forget. And thank you. Chief's fortune telling still haunts me sometimes, and while I've changed in many ways since those early agency days, at least in one way I'm still the same. I'm still as bullheaded as I ever was. I'll keep chasing what others say can't be.